Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. It is the week of October 29th. As you listen to this, it'll probably be Tuesday, October 30th, the eve of Halloween. I'm in a great mood. Red Sox won again, another world title. Very, very happy. Hopefully, by the time you're listening to this, the Patriots will have once again been victorious on Monday night against the Bills of Buffalo, a team that Donald Trump almost bought at one point. Imagine if that had happened, how much history would change. Anyway, we have a lot of MMA to talk about this week. A lot of stuff has been happening recently, as well as some stuff coming up this weekend. We have UFC returning to Madison Square Garden for UFC 230, part of their big run. 9 shows coming up from now until the end of the month. And, of course, the trade, so to speak, between Demetrius Johnson, involving Demetrius Johnson and Ben Askren, as well as UFC Moncton that just happened a few days ago, and a few other things as well. So joining me on this week's episode, this week's voyage, old friend of the show, Spencer Kite of Sporting News, and then also UFC.com. We talk about all the subjects for about 45 minutes or so, and yeah, it was really good. So the only thing I will note is that the cell phone connection for Spencer was a little bit off. I'm going to do some work with the audio, but it wasn't terrible by any means, but just, it, you know, you could definitely notice it was a cell phone. So I'll just kind of throw that out there. But I still think it was a really good interview. Well worth your time. And I appreciate you listening to it. So let's get right to it. Yours truly, Josh Nason, Spencer Kite, all types of UFC news. Enjoy. All right. Well, it is Celebration Monday here at Casa de Nason because the Red Sox are World Series champions once again. 2018, big victory on Sunday, and helping me celebrate to talk all about baseball because he is an insider when it comes to baseball. He's a former pitcher for the Texas Rangers. He is a Hall of Famer and our good friend, past guest, Spencer Kite, joining us once again. And Spencer, I asked you this before when we did this this intro once, but I'm going to ask you again. And I, even though I know the answer, how did you celebrate last night winning with the Red Sox winning the World Series?
As I told you then, I will tell you now. I celebrated by paying it no attention whatsoever, other than enjoying sort of the back and forth, you know, revelatory Red Sox Nation on Twitter, and then the rest of the world expressing how much they hate Red Sox Nation, and kind of like New England sports in general. I saw the Darren Revelle graphic today of a 16-year-old born in the New England area has enjoyed 11 world championships across football, hockey, basketball, and baseball in their lifetime. And there's a couple, like, there's a couple Super Bowl losses in there, and there's a couple other very good playoff runs, so I've had it pretty good over the last 16 years, so I think I've stayed away from it. I mean, I'm going to hear it listening to Simmons this week and things like that, so I stayed away from it. I was just getting back from vacation with my wife, so I enjoyed a World Series-free past 7 days.
Well, I'm sorry that you had to experience that, because I tell you, it was more joy than hanging out with your wife, because I know that, because I was trying to avoid my wife during this time. You have her separated out in a different part of the house. But she was, all kidding aside, the game that went till 3 a.m. Eastern, that was something where I came to bed, and she usually does not wake up, but she heard me come to bed super late. She turns over, she's like, she happened to look at her phone. She's like, it's 3 a.m. I'm like, I know, this game's still going. I'm going to watch the rest tomorrow. She's like, what? And then she just went to bed. So it was, that one's probably for the best. But it's a, I think for those people that, you know, that they're very frustrated by the amount of titles that that Boston wins. It's in this region. It's not because we cheat or do anything different. It's just the ownership groups found something pretty unique. And I think something pretty obvious is that when teams win, they make a lot of money, both in merch, both in ticket sales for next year, sponsorships, all that stuff. So it's really in everyone's best interest to try to keep that ship floating, the train rolling as much as possible. And that when one team wins, then everyone's like, why doesn't this other team win? And then so on and so forth. So it's a is very unusual. We know we're in a golden age here when it comes to stuff, and we are the envy of other people and very obnoxious at times and things like that. But I'll tell you what, any other sports fan in any other region would kill to have this type of success for probably just one of their teams, but to have all four, as you mentioned, is quite spectacular, I must say. ESK, quite spectacular. Demetrius Johnson-esque, I would say.
Well, to be fair, there were some pretty lean years in there. I think that's the part that we have to add as well when we're talking about this 16-year run of excellence. There were some pretty rough years in there where there were close calls and some really terrible teams. And so maybe the balance has shifted a little too much to too many titles going up to New England, but, you know, it makes up for the curse of the Bambino and some of the other heartbreaks that there have been along the way. So it makes sense. It's fair. It's all right.
Yes, it is. It's definitely makes sense. And I'll take everyone's congratulations at every point over the next years and years and years to come. Anyway, let's get to the sport of Kings, because it's been a very interesting week, and a very interesting week lies ahead. A lot less interesting than we initially thought when this card started coming together. That I'm, of course, talking about UFC and Madison Square Garden. But I want to rewind a little bit. And let's just talk really briefly about UFC Moncton that happened on Saturday. Not a card with a lot of fanfare by any means. I am still making my way through the prelim portion, but I've seen all the main card and seen part of the prelims. Not too newsworthy coming out of it, other than the fact, I think, obviously, that, you know, the main event, which should be the most newsworthy thing, and that Anthony Smith really just kind of plowing through a fatigue and just looking really exhausted. Taking a lot of heavy shots at the hands of Volkan Ozdemir. And in the third round, coming up with a big rear naked choke submission, one that wasn't necessarily, super tight by any means and not necessarily a classic Brazilian jiu-jitsu style, but he had it on clamped enough, was able to get underneath Ozdemir's chin and was able to take advantage of just fatigue and was able to get it done, submitted Volkan Ozdemir in the third round. Now, Anthony Smith, one of the most interesting stories that's really evolved at light heavyweight here in 2018 is he keeps on going with a big win over a guy who just challenged for the title in January.
Yeah, and to me, that the fact that it wasn't pretty and that it wasn't, you know, the kind of performance we saw in his first two fights in the division against Rashad Evans and Shogun Hua, and that he still got it done, is a really important and really impressive takeaway from that fight for me, because he did have to sort of push through, as you said, some of that fatigue, and he did have to kind of grind it out and grit it out against a guy that we've all accepted is, you know, a legitimate top-five guy. As you mentioned, challenged for the title at UFC 220 in Boston, to bring Boston into this, as Boston has to be brought into everything today.
That's right.
And so for him to be able to still have that performance and not look great but still get the victory, to me, is encouraging and sort of further cements his standing as a guy we have to continue to pay attention to and a guy that we have to look at as sort of a fresh name in this division where we have been dying for fresh names for a number of years. And so it wasn't pretty. It wasn't, as you said, classic Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It was a well-timed takedown and then kind of take advantage of an opponent that's fatigued as well and just squeeze out the finish. But to me, the fact that he continues winning and he keeps going forward and we're seeing some new wrinkles or more wrinkles than just Anthony Smith going out and running through guys are all positive going forward into 2019.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting kind of developments of 2018, this is something that's been talked about, but is really kind of taking hold, is that light heavyweight is starting to get some fresh blood in there and starting to get some interesting names and guys rising up. And certainly it's not lightweight or anything like that, but, you know, compared to where we were, you know, a year ago, even where it just was like John Jones, Daniel Cormier, an injured Alexander Gustafsson, and pretty much any hodgepodge of like old stars and just, you know, a couple prospects but just not a lot else. There's names throughout and even guys coming off losses, you know, even Ozdemir, he's still at this point, he's a, he's a known commodity and not necessarily a, you know, superstar by any means, but he's a, he's an interesting fight if you see him up against a contender. You have guys like John Blachowicz, who had a big victory. Obviously, the champion himself, but it's kind of in this weird spot of when what's going to happen, this light heavyweight title. Obviously, we know that, you know, Jones and Gustafson is going to happen. The reason I say we don't know what's going to happen with the titles because there's a long time between now and December, a long time for someone to get hurt, something, some weird shenanigans that seems to happen in the sport all the time. And so it's kind of, we think we know where things are going, but it's fascinating. And you have guys like, obviously, Jimmy Manoa is still around. Dominic Reyes, a prospect who's really starting to rise up, and I hope they take their time with him. You still have some of these, you know, these old guards still around, like a Shogun Hua, who's obviously less interesting, but, you know, is still kind of a presence in the division. So 205, really, it's a, you know, we don't have Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz. They're headlining their own pay-per-view in about a month. But, you know, light heavyweight, for everything it's gone through, and I think there's still, if you get some of these guys to move up a division, guys like Luke Rockhold, you know, who knows, maybe Chris Weidman down the road, but, you know, someone like Luke Rockhold, you still have some very, very interesting fights and at least some interesting names and yeah, some interest, which has kind of been devoid other than top guys for a long time.
Yeah, I think that top three is still pretty much set in stone, and we can all agree that, you know, John Jones, DC, and Alex Gustafson have sort of elevated themselves above everyone else. But as you said, we've got Anthony Smith, who looked pretty good on Saturday, still going forward. We've got Dominic Reyes, who just got a very good win a couple of weeks back. Misha Sirkov looked good again on Saturday. And then in addition to those veterans that have kind of been there for a while, the Jimmy Mann was the Ovince St. Preux. We've got, you know, Alexander Rachek. We've got some guys coming off of the Contender Series, Yolando Medifield and Jim Crook, who both fight before the year is out. We've still got a guy like Elir Latifi, who has been around but is starting to put together some wins. And Corey Anderson, who looked great in beating over to share last time out, and then a guy that Anthony Smith is familiar with in Thiago Santos, as you said, is another one of those guys that's moving up and sort of, you know, thought about it, then saw the success that Anthony Smith was having, since why beat him at middleweight? Now he's beating all these guys at like heavyweight, let me go up. His first fight ended up being against another middleweight, Eric Anders, but he looked good, and now he gets Manoa before the year is out, so he could be another guy. And to me, the big thing is just, as you said, giving these guys some time and letting them sort of not get thrown into the deep end too quickly, not rushing them into these big fights against the more established guys where they get knocked off and suddenly we're still with the same four, five, six guys. And any of that fresh blood that was maybe coming up has already been sort of rendered not quite capable of getting there. And so it's nice to see these Contender Series guys getting tough fights, but not thrown in too deep, and seeing guys like Thiago Santos, who seems like he deserves an opportunity right away. There's not a reason to sort of slow play him. He's been around. We know what we have in him at middleweight. Get him in there, and if he beats Jimmy Manoa, then you have him as a new contender. The same way on the weekend, Anthony Smith goes out there and beats Volkan Ozdemir, and now he's a contender as well. So I'm excited about the way 205 is shaping up sort of these last 2 months of this year and heading into next year. But as you said, anything can happen in this division going forward. I think we're all kind of expecting some kind of chaos or odd thing to happen, but hopefully it doesn't. We just get a division that I don't think ever gets back to what it was sort of in the glory days of the division, but it is getting better and it is getting deeper with every passing month.
Anything else stick out to you from the show this past weekend? Obviously, there's it's kind of a middle of the pack when it comes to card quality. Like, you know, talent wise, there's not a lot of contenders on there. Obviously, the Lobov Magomed, who is he supposed to fight for the McGregor camp and that whole thing?
It was supposed to be Zubara Tukagov.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
who was one of the guys that jumped into the cage and started swinging on Connor. And I mean, the great Artem Lobov loses another fight, continues to fall further below 500, continues to get prominent placement on fight card. It just shows you that if you are super close to Connor McGregor, you can remain on the UFC roster despite for results.
Yeah, I think it was part of the new contract he signed, right?
I mean, there's got to be something because it's. I'm now at the point where, like, a couple of years ago, the jokes and the tongue-in-cheek about the great Artem Lobov and the god Artem Lobov on social media was cute and funny. Now I'm at the point of, like, hey, we need to stop this because people are paying more attention to this guy who maybe does this, like, he gets down the UFC roster. There's a place for him. He is a guy that will come out and give you a tough fight every time. He's been the distance, I think, almost every time he's been in the cage. So you know you're going to get your money's worth with him. But in terms of headlining in Nashville a couple of years ago against Kemp Swanson or being the co-main event of this show, that stuff needs to stop because there are guys, even on this card on Saturday, that deserved that greater opportunity in the spotlight than he does for being a sub-500 fighter both in the UFC and overall. And we need to kind of pop the brakes on the whole. Let's talk about Artem Lobov. Even if we are acknowledging, and I know Chuck Mindenhall wrote a very good tongue-in-cheek piece about this, coming out of that fight of like, oh, he lost again, but he's still the greatest, wink, wink. We need to just, it's time to just let that kind of die off to me and focus on some of these people that did have strong performances, like Don Match, who looked great in his debut, like Alvin Kidder, who got a good win over a very tough kid, Chris Fishgold coming over from the UK, and like Nasrat Haqparast, who looks like a mini Calvin Gastelum and just keeps posting victories at the lightweight division. 23-year-old training at a TriStar that is somebody that has upside that I want to see more of and hear more from rather than a guy like Artem.
Yeah, to your point, yeah. Serkinov, you mentioned earlier, he had obviously a big victory, the first round submission over Patrick Cummins. Sukumatov, you mentioned before at the bantamweight, he looked really good in a lot of spots. So he's he's an exciting mix there at 135. And when he's on the bill, I think he's one of those guys that the more higher profile fights that he gets, or at least some more names, if he continues to look good, I think that's going to be I think he's going to be one of those fan favorites pretty quick as more people get to know him. And again, it's a very Boston themed show, so we have to mention, like you just said, Calvin Kattar looking great again against Chris Fishgold. He's had an awesome 2018. Obviously, he had the big victory in January at that Boston show, and then the win before that. So his contract is actually up, as you mentioned. I like that. A few people on the card that picked up wins mentioned that this was their last. Sean Strickland mentioned the same thing, saying this was essentially the last fight of their deal, and they're looking to impress. You could kind of see Dan Hardy kind of just gloss by that. It was kind of like, yeah, what's next for you in the UFC? Kind of assuming they were going to resign, but it's good that guys are kind of like on that level, kind of like making it known that that they're available. And I think that's positive. Kattar looked great as well as Strickland. So, I don't think they're not going to be making McGregor money, but at least it maybe gives them a little bit more negotiating leverage going forward.
Well, I think we're getting to that point again in this sport where it's becoming more prevalent that guys are fighting out their contracts and they are looking elsewhere. And I know we're going to talk about it kind of later on. Maybe this is the segue where we get to it. But, you know, there are organizations like Bellator and ONE that are taking a longer look at some of these. And these guys aren't just moving to different organizations once they get released or when they're on losing streaks. It's not so much, I think some of the shine of fighting in the UFC is coming off, and guys are more focused on, and girls are more focused on doing what is best for them, for their family, for their career, financially, rather than sort of the prestige that used to always be attached to, I have to fight in the UFC. It is becoming more spread out, more diverse market. And we're seeing that. And so to me, it's always great. Competition is great in this sport. As much as I want to see all of the best fighters in the world compete against one another under one banner, I understand that for those athletes and for these organizations, having multiple options is the best thing. That helps them earn as much as they can. And so to see different guys on Saturday and even some others before that, more recently, talking about my contract's up and, you know, the UFC and I are far apart right now, so I'm looking to see what's out there. I think that's nothing but a good thing for this sport going forward.
So you allude to it, and we'll spend a few minutes talking about the quote unquote trade, which really it's a trade, but it's more a contractual understanding between two entities, I think is probably the best way of putting it. But Demetrius Johnson, the former UFC flyweight champion and one of the best in the sport's history, record holder of the UFC title defenses, and probably one of the more underappreciated fighters in the sport, as we've talked about, I've talked about, what have everyone's talked about. And going to ONE Fighting Championship, signing a deal with them. And in return, Ben Askren agreeing to sign a deal with the UFC. Again, Ben Askren in the UFC. It's finally happening. This seemed to come to fruition. The iceberg seemed to thaw a little bit more this year, via social media, via Joe Rogan, wherever you want to say it. But regardless, one of the best welterweights, I guess one, I wouldn't say obviously of all time, that's a little aggressive, but one of the, I think one of the more interesting welterweight, not even a prospect, established fighters who we all were curious about how we would do in the UFC. And he's talked about how we would do in the UFC, and he's finally going to get his opportunity. And this, I think it's very interesting. You have obviously Johnson going to ONE, but when this whole thing came out, this was, I think, a surprise to everyone, because, you know, Johnson was, he's had his issues with the UFC in the past. And there's been obviously, you know, every time he fights on a pay-per-view, there's always the, this mongoose as far as around his neck, and the whole, does he draw and blah, 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 and what have you. So he finally loses, and now he's going somewhere else. So when this whole thing came out, I was like, this is a very big surprise in a lot of ways. When you first heard the news, I assume you were surprised, but where'd your mind go to as far as like how this thing came together?
I'm definitely surprised, but my initial reaction was disappointment, because I have been sort of one of the lead Demetrius Johnson cheerleaders for a long, long time. I think he's one of the most complete fighters we've ever seen in this sport. I think he's a guy that, you know, 5-10 years down the road, when we sit back and look at the totality of what he's accomplished, we'll realize a lot of people that didn't appreciate him during his UFC heyday will realize that they missed him, and that, you know, just because he's Texas 125 pounds doesn't mean that what he was doing wasn't amazing. I think anytime you look at, you know, that consecutive winning streak and that consecutive successful title defense, it's staggering. Those things don't happen in this sport. And he did it with flair. He did it with style. And if you want to make the argument that he wasn't fighting the best competition, or some of these, every champion has those moments where they fight the guy maybe isn't necessarily deserving. Anderson Silva had it. George St. Pierre had it. John Jones has had it. So the whole bout against DJ always felt weird. And so it felt disappointing to me that this is the way his UFC run is going to come to an end, losing the title by split decision and now going elsewhere. But then as more of the information came out that he had actually approached the UFC and ONE about seeing if this could happen, obviously his longtime head coach, Matt Hume, is the matchmaker over there. They have a great relationship. And so that started to thaw me a little bit. I started to feel a little bit better about it, because ultimately, as I said earlier, whatever is best for these guys, for their family, for their careers, by all means, go pursue it. And DJ seems absolutely pumped about this. We've seen sort of the official announcement that this is done in the last 36 hours. And he's talked about it on Ariel Helwani's show today, about how excited he is to go over there and just be a martial artist, not have any of the kind of promotional responsibilities and the promotional practices of the UFC in terms of hyping fights. And it just be about competition, which I think is great. I think he will do great over there. I will get up and watch it ungodly hours in the morning because we love seeing him compete. The weird part for me, and you mentioned Ben Askren being that sort of question mark, and I've always had it as well, of how would this guy do in the UFC? Is he as good as he looks beating these guys that are good but not great in ONE? I would like to have seen him go to the UFC at the conclusion of his Bellator contract, when he was coming off, you know, split decision with Jay Huron, beat Carl Amasu, beat Andre Korshkov, beat Douglas Lima in there as well. I would like to see them go at that point. I'm not as excited about it now because it's been 5 years since then. It's been a year since he last fought. He had retired, this, that, and the other. But then, you know, Ben Askren takes to Twitter and starts calling everybody out. And you think, okay, I just throw him in there with somebody tough. Throw him in there with a top 10 guy right away. And I think that's what the UFC will end up doing. And so I'm in. Give me that first fight, and then we'll take it from there. The part that I'm a little bit disappointed in is that it seems like the UFC has decided we'll get rid of this guy that was a headache for us and didn't want to play ball the way that we wanted him to play ball. And we'll bring in this guy who has always been qualified and classified as one of the most boring fighters in the history of sport. And a guy that Dana himself has said, you know, lay and pray, boring, don't want to watch him compete, needs to go and get more experience. And now they're bringing him in because he seems like he's a guy that can generate some interest on social media. And he can do what he's done over the last few days of just talking a huge game and then kind of be boring in the cage, potentially. Maybe that changes. Maybe Ben Askren comes out and looks to be more aggressive, looks to sort of pursue finishes more, and isn't just a grind-out wrestler. But we'll see. That's the one part that sort of disappointed me, is that we ship off DJ, who I thought was always entertaining, and a complete mixed martial artist for a guy that has sort of just been a grinding wrestler. And I'm okay with grinding wrestlers. I love grappling. I love watching it. I think it's terrific. But I don't want to hear all the people that are now going to complain about Ben Askren's style when you were just so happy that we were getting rid of an electric all-around fighter like DJ. So that was long, but it makes sense.
So with Johnson, with his move, so here's what I was kind of first stuck out to me. Like, obviously, why did he want to go? Was it his choice? And we, and as you alluded to, we learned a little bit more about that with the conference call they did on Sunday night, facilitated by one. And also, he's you mentioned his interview with El Wandy today. So what's interesting is that this was another nod toward fighters that are have achieved a certain level in the UFC. And not necessarily all wins, but like have been there for a good amount of time. Maybe they've won a title. And I'm thinking about really specifically Johnson and Eddie Alvarez, when they're like, cool, we've checked this off the list. And this UFC is never meant to be a final destination, which forever we think in terms of pro sports and everything else, we think of UFC in the highest level, so to speak. That's your final destination. Why would you ever want to fight anywhere there? Where would you ever want to play anywhere else other than Major League Baseball? Why, you know, the NFL and so on and so forth. But with fighting, you know, the UFC, I think in these past, I don't know, 5 years, 4 years, 3 years, whatever it's been, that shift has really changed from you make it there, but then it doesn't necessarily mean you want to stay there. And perhaps the, you know, the money thing is played into it. Perhaps the USADA stuff, the uniforms, all these type of things have really contributed to a situation where guys get to a certain level and then they're like, well, maybe we're going to look somewhere else. And we've kind of checked this box. And I think that was that for on Johnson's side, that's what really fascinated me, that he was not, I would say not interested, but he wasn't like, you know, I want to get my title back from Cejudo. And that was kind of telling. And then, you know, he wants to go do this other thing. And I think I think I haven't heard the Helwani interview yet, but I wonder how much of the talk about the pay-per-view draws and headlining and all this stuff, I wonder how much that's just fatigued him mentally. And you alluded to it that he wants to just be a martial artist. And maybe he's like, look, I just want to go fight. I want to go have interesting fights. I want to be a different environment, different everything. And that's what's going to make me happy. And maybe someday I'll go back to UFC, but really it's like, I want to go test myself somewhere else without all the pressure. And I wonder if that just that whole package kind of put together, where he's like, I don't really want to fight in the UFC anymore. I've been there, done that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the impression I get. I mean, I've talked to DJ a lot over the years, and all of that talk about, is he a draw? Isn't he a draw? Why is he a draw? Why is he not a draw? Really did grow frustrating to him. He never wanted to talk about it because he was tired of it. Cause a lot of it is stuff that he doesn't control, right? Like, there was always this conversation that he has no personality, yet anyone that talks to him regularly or got to know him a little bit the first thing they would tell you is, like, that's just not true. Like, AJ's great as an interview. He just doesn't say the things that fans seem to want now, which is all of the trash talk, which is all of the disrespect, because that's not who he is as a person. And so I think what you were saying is definitely a part of it, of just, you know, I've done everything that I can do. I've done going through these arguments and battles with the UFC about different fights that I want to take, how much money I want to get paid, all of those arguments. I can go over here and just, they're going to pay me a number that I'm happy with. I'm going to get to compete, and I'm not going to have to do or deal with any of that stuff that I'm tired of dealing with, where just being great wasn't enough. And so to me, it makes perfect sense. And that's a big part of his reasoning is, I can go make all this money and I don't have to deal with all the extra stuff that actually doesn't factor into the greatness of his career and how good he is at his actual job. Like, that's the part I think we lose a lot when we focus so much on pay-per-view buy rates or television ratings and things like that. Those things aren't necessarily representative of the quality of the event you're seeing or what kind of action is produced by those fighters. They're just popularity numbers. It's the same as, and I'm probably going to get crushed for this, but it's the same as the World MMA Awards at the end of every year, when everybody gets all up in arms about who wins Journalist of the Year and who's up. It's just a vote. It's no different than American Idol. Nobody thinks that American Idol is a perfect representation of the greatest unsigned singer in the world. It's just voting. It's just who you vote for and who you're willing to spend money for in terms of pay-per-view buys. And so I think we lose some of that, and DJ just doesn't want to deal with that anymore, and I understand that completely.
I think part of it, the whole kind of bargain with buys and the talk about who draws what and whatever. And obviously, you know, our site with Dave Meltzer, it's pretty heavy into that stuff, but you know, for good reason. But you know, I think it is, it's a good barometer of what people are interested in to an extent. But I think also, you know, I think the fight fan, the average fight fan these days, or maybe even called the casual fight fan, which is really who these people, these organizations are trying to reach. The hardcores know where to go. They know what to watch, how to watch it, how to get it. They understand that. Like, you don't have to really sell them too much, but you have to try to satiate them so they don't completely bury a card like they were trying to with Madison Square Garden, which we'll get to in a second. But I also think that, you know, that the average fans, and not to say that I have this huge fight IQ or you do or whatever, but I think what appeals to us does not necessarily appeal to them, but because their UFC is not trying to reach us, you know, that's what this narrative kind of builds with guys like Johnson, like they can't draw. So that must mean that he's not good, when it's like, okay, that's not necessarily the case. But some guys, you know, they can't get people to press click on and buy a pay-per-view. They just don't, for whatever reason. Skill-wise, they should. You know, if you put Conor McGregor masks on them, maybe they would. But there's some that they have the skill level. They have, you know, skill levels that far surpass guys like McGregor. And I almost said John Jones, but he's obviously a super skilled fighter. But people get what I'm saying, that, you know, it's some people, sometimes they just can't draw, and the promotion has to kind of shield them as best they can and maybe add them as, you know, side dishes or kind of a main dish along with a bigger main dish, so to speak. But he just, you know, Johnson, he just never connected on that level. And they gave him opportunities, and they tried him on Fox plenty of times. It just never carried over, and that's okay. But it just always seemed to be this thing that, like, carried it. Like, why can't he be this way? And unfortunately, you know, some people just can't, for whatever reason. But yeah, I just wonder if the average fight fan's ability to see past that and get so fixated on that, not be able to see just straight ability and just enjoy something, I wonder if that kind of plays into it, you know?
Yeah, and that's sort of my concern with how much we and look. Dave has always and will always do a terrific job, and there's very much a place for analyzing pay-per-view buys and ratings, and those things are important. My concern was always with DJ and with different fighters, do we put too much emphasis on that to where it becomes the lead story for that fighter, and we're not talking about the skill they bring to the cage or what they've accomplished or what is at stake in that particular fight? And so for me, I think it's very much what you said of hardcores know we're tuning in. We're that baseline of guaranteed pay-per-view buys and sort of the bottom tier ratings threshold on Fox and things of that nature. I wish there was a way that we could convince more people to tune into the Demetrius Johnsons of the world and some of these non-massive crossover stars, because I think people are missing out. But we're just not where we were 5-8 years ago, where every show was drawing, 300,000 was the baseline. That was, you could guarantee that. And Rashad Evans and Rampage Jackson with no belt on the line and not a lot behind it drew a million pay-per-view buys. Those days are just gone. And I think by our constant fixating on how low is this number going to be, it takes away from, but how great are the fights going to be? How good are the performances going to be? How good did that person look? It doesn't matter to me. I don't get anything from the UFC getting 100,000 or a million pay-per-view buys. What I get is good fights. And if I'm getting good fights, I don't care how many other people are watching it. I would like for the growth of the sport for a million people to watch every pay-per-view. But let's talk about the thing that really matters and has an influence, and that's the performances. And I think we lost that with DJ. I hope we get a little bit away from it now, but again, we're also coming off the biggest pay-per-view in history that is just kind of gonna light a fuse for people wanting even more of that. And the guy the UFC is bringing in is a guy that can talk trash and sort of stoke those fires that are going to interest casual fans more than, hey, this guy's a great competitor, but he doesn't say much. So be interesting to see where we go with all of this in 2019.
So let's round the bend with UFC coming up, Madison Square Garden, this Saturday. Obviously, as we record this, it is Monday afternoon, so a lot can happen between now and then, including, who knows, New York Athletic Commission perhaps, pulling a trump card, so to speak, and maybe not clearing Derek Lewis or Daniel Cormier, given what they've said. I mean, who knows what can happen. But I remember the Eubanks-Shevchenko fight first got floated out there on Twitter. Never officially announced by the UFC, but definitely got floated out there essentially to kind of get a litmus test. And boy, what a litmus test it was. And I distinctly remember you on Twitter, and I just remember this because I was happening to be looking at the time, basically kind of be like, are we going to pretend this isn't a good card now? Like this at that point, we still had Nate Diaz, Dustin Poirier. We still had Rockhold Weidman, and I know you were a little bit upset at that. And now, as we sit here, 5 days before the event, 6 days before the event, we have no Diaz Poirier. Rockhold is injured, and now we have a short notice Daniel Cormier against a short notice Derek Lewis for the heavyweight title. And I fully just, if this fight happens, I'm just fully predicting chaos theory and Derek Lewis to completely mess up the Cormier Lesnar fight or whatever he chooses to do. But as you sit here on a Monday, what do you make of this Madison Square Garden card and the road that we have taken to get to the spot?
I mean, it definitely sucks that we've lost a couple of those fights. The Dustin Poirier-Diaz fight was the fight I was really looking forward to, just like everybody else. Definitely looking forward to finally seeing Chris Weidman and Luke Rockhold running back. But again, that hasn't happened. I asked Chris over last week whether he and Luke are becoming the Tony and Khabib of middleweight. He laughed. It's still a fight that he wants and hopes that they will be able to get together at some point. It's not, there's no way to say this is as good a card as it was, because we've had a removal of Dustin Poirier and Nate Diaz and losing Luke Rockhold. It's still an interesting card to me. I love the fact that there are those four middleweight bouts on the main card of sort of different levels, different places in the pecking order we're getting to see. It's going to get a little bit more clarity to sort of where everybody shakes out in the division going into next year, whenever Robert Whittaker and Kelvin Gastelum do fight, and still having kind of Luke Rockhold on the outside as a maybe. I'm intrigued by the main event. I think it's, like everybody else, I think it's rushed. I think it's weird that DC wasn't going to be able to fight, but then they said Derek Lewis, and he was like, my hand's fine, let's do it. I like Derek Lewis's honesty throughout this of needs to wear his cardio in order to get this fight. K-Dub says Stipe deserves it more than me, but he'll be there, and he's Derek's that guy that, you know, we fought in the Volkov fight. He lost 14 minutes and 30 seconds of that fight and got his hand raised and earned a title shot. That's what he brings to the table. And he is a big, strong dude at the opening second and the very last second of the fight, no matter how long it goes. And that's risky for DC. And this is absolutely a huge risk, zero reward fight. Daniel Cormier is supposed to win this fight. He's supposed to dominate. He's supposed to get in there and make it look easy. Your chaos theory thing is definitely something I've considered, but this is, you know, like, this is tempting fate, right? We all know the Brock Lesnar thing is sort of sitting there waiting to happen. And now you're throwing Derek Lewis into the mix, who was literally 20 seconds away from getting a loss a month ago and is now fighting for the heavyweight title. So it's going to be crazy. And I'm happy to see Cesar Eubanks get the opportunity to stay on the card, because part of that whole, do you mean to tell me this isn't a good card now, now that we've just got this extra fight, is it as much as some people don't know who Cesar Eubanks is? She's earned her way into this place. She is a legitimate contender in this division. If she has to go and prove that on Saturday night by beating Roxanne Modafferi, she will go and try to do that and continue to earn her place. But, you know, the fact that people sort of turned on this card and turned on the UFC and the idea of it because of her being in that fight, and then we're like, no, but Derek Lewis is 100%. Let's throw him in there. It's like, really? We're going to, you know, turn our back on this card because of someone who beat a top five opponent last time out and looked great and was supposed to fight for the title coming out of tough, but now Derek Lewis, who we've all sort of just laughed about and been like, yeah, Derek Lewis is a great guy that we all enjoy. He's super entertaining. He says stuff like, my balls was hot, and makes a t-shirt about it because that's so Derek Lewis. And we're just happy to accept him into the main event. And so it's interesting. I mean, I can't wait for it because there's, you know, I'm fully subscribing to your chaos is going to reign idea. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing if that's how it does play out.
So as I'm kind of looking at this, I'm just thinking about our conversation we just had about not getting on fighters because, you know, for pay-per-view buys or things like that. This whole thing, Dave Doyle actually mentioned this a few weeks ago in a little bit of a rant against Madison Square Garden. He's like, what is the big deal about Madison Square Garden? That's basically what he was saying. Like, why does this have to be such a big thing? And I think it was because The first MSG show marked the fact that UFC was MMA was legal in New York State. It was this long, ridiculous fight, but they finally got it. And it was kind of like, okay, we got the crown jewel here. We're there at one of the most famous arenas in the world, blah, 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 but we're here. And, of course, in the 2 years prior, we've had these big tentpole-ish fights at Madison Square Garden. Dana White saying, when have we never delivered? In Madison Square Garden, that just escalates things a bit because that's one of those, you know, Dana White sound bites which you can just kind of hold on to. And this, the show, it's interesting. It just, it would certainly obviously be a lot more interesting with a Diaz brother on the show, as we know. But it's, they're going to have to do a lot of, they're going to have to pull some rabbits out of some hats this week when it comes, or as Jason Witten said in Monday Night Football, rabbits out of heads. When it comes to, you know, getting the casuals what they're trying to get, and maybe at this point they're kind of resigned, like, okay, this show is going to do what it's going to do, and, you know, all full steam ahead towards that end of the year show in December. Actually, two shows in December should be excellent. But yeah, it's you know, the Weidman Sousa fight, it's interesting in a lot of ways, but it's you know, obviously the Rockhold fight just seemed to be a lot more sexier. For a lot of reasons, and you know, but Brunson Adesanya, I think Adesanya is going to be pushed pretty heavy this week just because he can talk that talk, and because these two really dislike each other, so I think that may help turn up the heat a little bit. But it's a show, and yeah, like I'm basically predicting as of this point that I don't know if I'm going to go with Lewis, but this has all the makings for one of these classic Daniel Cormier falters. And granted, he did not do that against Stipe Miocic. It's a much, you know, different Daniel Cormier seemingly now headspace wise, but just the way that everything is built up, and just because it's like Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon when he's so close to retirement and, you know, good things on the way out, right? And then, you know, I'm getting too old for this shit line. you know, he's got these potential two potential. He says he's got two fights left, even though I think if he wins this one, I think he's going to find a way to try to do both Lesnar and Jon Jones, but we'll see what happens. But he's so close to the end. He is like, his Q rating has never been higher. Everyone loves him. WWE right. wants him to be a broadcaster too. And he's got just this relatively last minute fight coming up. And it just against a guy who mentioned lost almost all of his last fight, except for one miracle shot. I just have this weird feeling. And I keep flashing back to Cormier Anderson Silva win, which is not really a great fight, but Silva caught him one time in the gut and everything just kind of changed from that. And you just felt the shift, like Cormier being like, uh-oh, you know, and it's just that moment. So I don't know. Anything can happen. I think that's kind of the angle they're going to have to play up this week. But I expect Brunson and Adesanya and kind of looking at the show to really carry the promotional weight in terms of a truly heated rivalry that we're going to see play out on Saturday.
Yeah, there's a bunch of entertaining fights and a bunch of fights that should be exciting when they hit the cage. I think anybody that expected this to be, and let's make it clear, the UFC put themselves in a position to where everyone expects the November show at Madison Square Garden to be this monster, because back-to-back years, they did three title fights and loaded those cards from top to bottom. Year one, I understand. Last year didn't necessarily make sense to me, given everything else that's going on. And I've said this for years, so people are probably tired of hearing it. But you can't just look at it. Let's get everything done so that this looks great on November 3rd and not worry about the rest of the year. Because as we did on this very show earlier this year, where we went, I think we did 26 events in 26 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Recapping from early September through to the start of this year, there's a huge push at the end of the year. And so you can't just load up so many great fights all the time on these New York shows and leave yourself empty down the line, because there are fight night events. There's a tough finale. There's two or three more pay-per-views that you need to execute, that need title fights and big fights. And so anyone going into this that thought, well, there's going to be two or three title fights and that's the way it should be, was kidding themselves, because all you had to do was look at the roster and look at who was available and who wasn't, and you knew it was going to be something similar to how it was constructed. And so losing Diaz Poirier, I think, is definitely a knock. That could have been the main event. Everybody seemed on board with it. It sucks that Dustin got hurt. I hope he recovers quickly. I hope Nate has been interested in that fight again, though it doesn't necessarily seem like that's the case. But, I mean, to get this in, I mean, any chance we get to see DC is one of those guys for me, that any chance we get to see him compete, I want to see it, because I think he's one of the greatest we've ever seen and doesn't get that respect. And this is, as I said, it's all risk. And as you said, it has the makings of that kind of fight where things could go sideways. And that's really interesting to me. So I hope a lot of people do tune in. I think the Israel Adesanya fight, as you mentioned a couple times, is going to be absolute fireworks. These two are going to be jawing at each other all week. And this is another good test for Izzy. Like, he looked great against Brad Tavares. I picked Tavares in that fight. I wasn't fully sold on Israel Adesanya as a contender yet. This is another step up. Derek Brunson is a tough dude, settled into the middle of that top five, or in the middle of that top ten. Let's see what Adesanya can do. And I mean, David Branch is going to have a point to make if he gets a victory. And Weidman and Ducker is a fight we've been waiting for a number of years, even if we didn't necessarily know it until a couple of weeks ago. So it should still be fun.
Yep, that's the hope. And to your point, UFC has put themselves in this position. Nine events coming up from this Saturday through the end of the year. Nine, just back-to-back stuff. So if things don't hit the way they want to on Saturday, they have nobody but themselves to blame. But I'm sure they'll blame someone else. Anyway, so we've talked a lot about a lot of news and interesting things coming up. And it's been a very fun 45 minutes. And before we let you go, Spencer, we'll give a chance for you to plug where people can read your work and all that good stuff. The floor is yours.
I'm keeping it very simple these days. It is Sporting News, and it is UFC.com, and all of it is emptied out on social media at Spencer Kite, SpencerKyte. Gone are the days of writing at 37 different sites, as I was when you first met me and knew me. I'm keeping it very simple. I'm keeping it very streamlined so that I can enjoy life with my wife and my dogs and the Canadian Southwest with our mutual friend, Eric Thompson, as calls where I live. So all those good things. I always appreciate you having me on, buddy. And congratulations again on yet another world championship.
Thank you very much. I'm glad that you have bowed down with feet of the king once again, but no, we are glad to have you back here. And I say we, there's only one person in the room, that's myself, but me and the millions and millions that listen to this show. Spencer Kite, thanks so much, and hopefully let's have our fingers crossed for chaos on Saturday night. All right. Big thanks to Spencer Kite for dropping by. Obviously, you can follow him on Twitter, read his work at sportingnews.com as well as UFC.com. And I think that's going to be about it. We talked all about UFC 230 coming up this weekend. And again, we just really hope that nothing happens between now and then. I fully expect something to happen just because the New York State Athletic Commission. And that's the kind of thing with this fight at the main event that I've heard mentioned that, you know, they've been strict in the past, and with these two guys admitting injuries and so on and so forth, just, you know, don't necessarily assume that everything is going to go smooth between now and Saturday night when this fight goes off. And yeah, we'll see what happens. But the you know, the Brunson Adesanya fight, that's the one I think is really going to be the one to watch in terms of kind of generating some fan interest. And I don't think it's going to push it to a huge buy rate or anything like that, but it is, it's people like heat. They like rivalries and they like that aggressiveness and they love that stuff. I love that stuff. You love that stuff. So we'll see what happens coming up on Saturday. And then we didn't even get into Frank Edgar getting out of being injured, falling out of the UFC 25th anniversary show fight. And just the week after, which is still really weird placement when you consider, you know, this Madison Square Garden show. Why didn't they just make this the 25th anniversary show and then just not have one next week? I don't know. The scheduling stuff really is weird. But we'll save that topic for another time. So for the entire Boston Red Sox team and all of Red Sox Nation, and for Spencer Kite, I hope you enjoy your week. This has been Josh Nason. Josh Nason's Punch Out. Until next time, insert catchphrase here. And we're the champs once again. The champs are here. Forget it. Insert catchphrase here. Bye-bye.